We are certainly seeing a huge increase in home prices, and we're expecting to see continued home price appreciation, both in the resale market and the new home market, as a result of just exactly what you're pointing out. You've got lower supply right now, and you've got pretty strong demand now.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenzi. I host the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, we have an appropriate guest today to tell us what's going to happen because, God, we don't know what's happening. And he's a repeat guest. I love his book. I'm going to start plugging it from the very beginning, Big Shifts Ahead. You need to pick up one of these and you need to get some paper because he's going to be throwing a lot of knowledge. And this is not just about multifamily, everybody. This is just basic trends for business. If you can see into the future of what you think is going to happen, it's going to be a big help, whether you're in the multifamily industry, whether you're in self-storage, whether you're in a pizza shop, whether you're a drug rep, whatever that may be, there's going to be a lot of trends and a lot of demographics we're going to be discussing in the show.
For sure. A big crossover into personal finance with this stuff as well. So without further ado, today's guest is Chris Porter, Chief Demographer at John Burns Real Estate Consulting, which provides independent research and consulting services related to the U.S. housing industry. Chris co-authored the best-selling book, Big Shifts Ahead, as the G-Dad just alluded to, Demographic Clarity for Businesses. This book's aim is to help executives make more informed decisions about the future of real estate on both the single family and multifamily sides of the business. So without further ado, the doctor of demography.
Yes.
Chris Porter, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks so much. It's good to be back.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Want to get into the book a little bit, but for the folks that don't know, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this niche.
Sure. So I've been working for John Burns Real Estate Consulting now for the last 15 years. And really our goal is to bring some more clarity to what's going on in the housing industry. We saw, the commercial real estate doing a really great job of this. They were producing great data. They're producing great analysis. And our CEO, John Burns, saw a real opportunity to do the same thing for housing. We're not a data provider, but our real value add is in understanding the trends that are going on and in terms of the data. I'm marrying that with on the ground work as well. So we do a lot of consulting work across the country, and we've got boots on the ground, really trying to understand what is happening in each housing market across the country. Bring all that together, the data through our published research products, the on the ground information, the on the ground insight, and really help bring our clients more clarity as to what's actually happening in housing. And as you're exactly right, it's not just builders and developers. I mean, we work with apartments owners, we work with single family rental operators, we work with building product companies. You know, really anybody who's invested in housing in one way, shape, or another, that's our client base. And we think that there's a lot of great information that we can provide to them to help them think about the future of their business.
Chris, what inspired you to write the book? Because when everyone out there who's listening to it purchases the book, they're going to go through it and go, holy crap, a lot of time and effort and research went into writing this book. And, it's a passion of love, obviously, but what really inspired you to spend so much time on writing a book like this?
Sure. There's two things. I mean, John and I have been having this conversation for probably 20 years now. I knew John before I even joined his team. And we wrote an article together years ago about the Hispanic homebuyer population, how that was just an emerging demographic trend. And so it's always been a real passion of John's to really understand the demographics of home buying and housing. Because think about it. I mean, it's the biggest investment that most people are going to make in their lives is their home. And so we really need to understand who that is that's out there buying. And so it's been something that's been long generating in our minds. And we decided to pull the trigger on it a few years ago and invest the time in doing the research to really uncover some clarity about some of these questions that people were raising. And I think we talked about this last time too, but you've got the boomers are somebody born in 1946 and somebody born in 1964, and they've had very different life experiences. And yet we're calling them boomers. And the same thing with the millennials, depending on how you define a millennial, it could be starting as early as 1980. Somebody born in 1980, and that's somebody who's 40 years old this year. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some definitions that say that the millennial generation ends in 2000, and that's somebody who's 20 years old. Well, that's very different life stages for those groups. And so we said, let's just bring a little bit more clarity to this conversation And really, it was an education for us. Like, how do we need to think about these things? And then we realized the more we dug into it, there's some great opportunities to present this to our clients. And then the more we dug into it, it was like, we got to share this with a broader audience. It's not just housing people need to know this. It's really any business needs to understand these underlying demographic trends, because some of them are pretty predictable. I mean, I know I'm going to be a year older a year from now. And so I'm 44 now. I'm going to be 45 next year. And so we look at the number of 45-year-olds we've got next year based on the number of 44-year-olds we have this year, mm-hmm. and make some adjustments there. But there is some elements of this that's predictable. And for those elements that aren't predictable, we take our best shot at trying to figure out what are the trends that are forming right now that are going to shape some of those unpredictable things in the future, and how do we take our best guess at what those are going to be.
So when you finish this monumental task, what were a couple of things that really were surprising to you, really stood out, that you're like, I didn't look at it that way, or I didn't expect that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the heavy reliance on the foreign-born population in terms of our country's growth. And, you know, the Census Bureau and in their last projections was estimating that a third of the net population growth in the U.S. was going to be driven by the foreign-born population coming to the U.S. And I mean, that's the way it had been for the last decade. And as they looked out to the next decade, that's what they thought it was going to be as well. We've definitely seen some changes in that. We've seen immigration slowing in the last few years. And then certainly with COVID, I mean, we've effectively shut our borders down, right? So immigration is going to be much slower this year. And I do have to wonder if going forward, we're going to see less immigration in the next few years, just as a result of people feeling maybe less welcome in the U.S. And so I think the heavy reliance the heavy reliance on the immigration trends over the last decade, you know, we're thinking about that going forward, but I think that's something that's in flux right now. So that was a big one. And then just really, I mean, a big thing for us, and we knew this, but it was just kind of really stark to see it in the numbers behind it, is just the big push for home ownership that was made, you know, there in the 90s, and just how much that actually contributed to such a rise in home ownership in our country. And now we're starting to see a little bit more of a shift towards rentership. Mm. And so that's, again, we knew this information, but gosh, once we really dug into the data, it was fascinating just to kind of look at how those numbers have played out over time, and really caused us to think about what does it look like going forward.
What areas of growth do you think are going to be experienced in the country? What, if you had to say, the Southeast or the Northwest, where do you see demographics playing a role in that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we definitely see the South, the Southeast is areas that are going to continue to grow. I mean, they have been for a while now. They've been capturing more than their share of the growth in recent years. And I think that only gets accelerated over the next few years, partially driven by the climate, also just partially driven by business-friendly environments that those states have created in order to attract jobs there. And that's really what's going to drive migration in our country, is where are the jobs occurring? And so that's I think, you know, where we're keeping our eyes on is that growth in the South and in the Southeast.
So I love in the book, you break down the four factors that cause generational shifts. Do you mind going through them? Everyone, I want you all to write these down. The first one is government. The second one is economic cycles. The third one is technology. And the fourth one is societal. And these are really important because they cause these generational shifts that Chris is talking about, if you can see into the future. So do you mind hitting on each one of those for us?
Sure. And I think this is really important right now. And Gina, we talked about this just a couple days ago when we spoke on the phone. You know, COVID really hits every single one of these things. I mean, we're seeing changes in government policy right now. We're going through this weird economic time right now that, quite frankly, we're still trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. We've seen shifts in technology that have changed the way that we work and the way that we live. And then we've got these societal shifts that are going on as well. So I think this is a really valuable tool, a really valuable framework to use as we kind of think about all that's going on in the world and in our country right now. So government policy, we want to look at that and think about, you know, how do the things that the laws that are being passed right now, or the decisions that are made by at the federal level by government officials affect our country. And so I think about, you know, how are mortgage rates being set right now? We are at an all-time low for mortgage rates. I mean, did you ever think that we'd be talking about mortgage rates that begin with a 2?
Nope.
I certainly didn't think that. And my parents, who, you know, had their first mortgage at like 16, 17, 18%, I don't think they'd ever saw it. We'd be talking about sub 3% mortgage rates. And that's government policy, right? Influenced by economic conditions. And that's the next one is, I mean, we are going through this unprecedented time right now. We've lost millions of jobs. And you think about, you know, the various groups who are losing jobs, or even those who are holding on a little bit longer to their jobs. I think about retirees, maybe they're people who are getting ready to retire. We're seeing some of them try to stay in the workforce, knowing that, you know, maybe their portfolio got hurt during this crash, and it's probably largely recovered to this point. But also, we're also seeing some people retire early and say, you know what, I'm done, and I lost my job, and I'm probably not going to find something that I enjoy as much, and so I'm ready to retire. And so we've seen the economy affecting people differently, and certainly people who are. My heart goes out to young adults who are just trying to get their foot in the door right now. I mean, they're graduating from high school, they're graduating from college into this horrible job situation. We've lost millions of jobs. It's going to be a slower start to their career at first. They certainly can catch up, but we're definitely keeping our eye on what's happening with the economy. And that's, I think, increasingly becoming harder to forecast, partially because right now we've got an economy that's been largely propped up by government stimulus. And so we've kind of created this artificial economy in a way that's harder to forecast that. And so we have a meeting today as a team to discuss how do we think about our forecasting going forward in light of all that's been going on. Technology. I mean, look at us. We're doing a Zoom call. To think about how much virtual meetings have overturned the workforce, and it's not going to require as much travel going forward. I think we're going to see more of these types of meetings occur more frequently, even when we do start going back to the office, and you know, more people working from home. So technology certainly has a huge influence on the way that our world operates, and I think in how these demographic trends will be shifted, and then just the societal shifts. That's kind of our junk drawer category for sort of everything else. You think about people getting married, having kids, all those things. I mean, certainly this time we're seeing, you know, fewer weddings occur because it's just harder to get married. We're seeing fewer babies being born because, quite frankly, I think some people are saying, I don't want to be pregnant during this time with so much uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And so those types of things are kind of grouped into the societal shifts category. There's so many other things too, the choice about where they want to live. And that's really been an interesting thing. And we can talk a little bit more about this too, as I know we wanted to talk a little bit about sort of that urban suburban shift that's occurring right now. But, you know, people have historically wanted to be close to job centers. And certainly in the last decade or so, it's been more of an emphasis. But now if you can work from home, you can work from anywhere, and you don't necessarily have to be as close to the job center. So does that create sort of the societal shift where people are not necessarily as tied to a city center or a job center as much, and they have a little bit more freedom as to choose where they want to live?
So Chris, I don't know if you could speak to this, but we were just speaking about New York a few minutes ago. And one of the reasons why New York and San Francisco and all these cities, they really prospered, is because they had a very educated workforce. Now we're seeing a lot of these people fleeing to other cities like Austin, like Raleigh, North Carolina, like Boise, Idaho, like Reno, Nevada. They have a much more educated workforce than they did 30 years ago. Is that another reason why they can leave, like you're saying, going from urban areas to suburban areas? Where I lived in New York, you can go to Westchester County, or you can go to Long Island, or you can go to upstate New York, because the population is more educated as far as the workforce housing goes. Do you guys look into that also?
You're right. And then we are seeing, so there's a couple things going on there. One, we see a lot of these cities really trying to attract jobs to them. You know, cities like Austin, cities like Raleigh, trying to really portray themselves as, you know, we're a city of highly educated people with great jobs as well. And so attracting people there. So I think that's been a big draw for people. We're also, you know, in this interesting time where we talked about the millennial generation just a little bit. The oldest of them are 40 this year. Or, you know, depending on which definition you use. But they're in those family formation
years.
Don't
want me in with them.
Too bad, bro.
They're in those family formation years where they've got families, and they're looking for affordability. They're looking for yards for their kids. And so, you know, the city living that they experienced in their 20s and maybe even their early 30s it's now shifting towards that suburban lifestyle. So we naturally see some of that shift from the cities to the suburbs already occurring. And quite frankly, if you can be in a, maybe you still want to be in a big city, but you don't want to be necessarily in New York or in San Francisco where it's super dense, but you can move out to another city where you can find a job that's, you know, equal, or you can even keep the same job and just and work remotely and have a little bit more space or have a little bit less density. I think that's something that's become important to people. And so we're just kind of seeing that happen naturally. I also think we're not going to see the big cities go away, but I think they're challenged right now for sure. And, you know, I've been trying to find some good sources of sort of real-time data and sort of that shift from cities to suburbs that everybody keeps talking about. And quite frankly, a lot of it gets written by, you know, the media who tends to live in these big cities and they see their peers and their friends moving out of the cities into the suburbs. I'm still trying to find some great real-time data ways to look at this to really kind of get a better handle on how much of that is actually occurring, how much of that shift from the cities to the suburbs is really going on.
So if you look at the millennials, they've got a pretty much a short end of the stick. If I'm looking at it, because the millennial born in 1980, in 2008, they would be 28 years old, correct? The Great Recession hits. The millennials born in 2000, they've got the COVID pandemic hit. So they've gotten two really massive life events that have really altered their life and have really, I think, made them poorer to begin with. So, you know, our generation, you know, the boomers and all, they had the inflation. They rode the inflation wave. They rode the great wealth of prosperity. Now the millennials are sort of behind the eight ball, and it's going to take them a lot longer to create wealth and to build wealth. So does that play into the renter mentality also when you're saying, oh, shifts are going into from single family housing?
And it's the gig economy.
Gig economy, but also education too. I mean, you think we have the most educated young adult population that we've ever had, and they've got the student debt to go along with that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're right. They've kind of been bookended by these two major events, the great financial crisis and now the COVID economy. They've got a lot of education. They've got great skills, and they embrace the technology that allows them to work very productively. The challenge is they've got debt and they just graduated into two pretty tough times. And we had a good run leading up to the COVID. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of those people who maybe were a little bit behind because of the great financial crisis had started to catch up, but then this hit and it was, it's just another challenge. So yeah, but we've done a lot of research on just trying to understand how does the economy, This goes into one of our four big influencers. How does the economy at the time that you graduate from high school or the time that you graduate from college and you're out looking for a job, how does that early part of your career shape the rest of your financial life and your success in life? And so I think it's going to be a catch-up game for sure. But the thing was, I have to say, so with the great financial crisis, I mean, you might have seen the graph in the book and we talked about how you know, for people in their, I think it was like in their mid-20s to mid-30s, and the economy that, or excuse me, it was the economy that they experienced during their working years. And for that millennial group who was in their early mid-20s to mid-30s, it was a tough start after the great financial crisis. But as we kept updating that graph over and over, the stock market kept getting better, the economy kept getting better, we were starting to see more improvement in GDP for those people during their working lives. So I think it can be caught up. But I think we've got a little bit more of a setback now because of COVID.
Chris, I can answer your question. When I graduated college in 1992, we were on the forefront of a recession back then also. I couldn't find the job. I actually had to have a neighbor down the street get me a job at AIG. I hated it. I'm glad that happened because I became an entrepreneur. I went and opened up a restaurant because there was no other jobs out there. They were actually telling me to come down to New York City to intern for like $9 an hour back then. I wasn't even getting paid enough to pay for my train and my parking pass to get down there. So that's how it affected me. And I'm assuming that's how it's going to affect a lot of people getting into the workforce now. You're out of college. There are no jobs right now. Well, I guess you have to go find whatever you can. And I was fortunate enough to have a dad who was in business. So that's, I think, where people are going to be looking at right now. So it's interesting.
And it is, it's a very resourceful generation. You know, they've got education, they've got the technology skills behind them, backing them up. So I think they'll be resourceful and make the best of it. it's just a hard time. And I, my, like I said, my heart really goes out to these. I mean, there's so many people being affected, but just, I also just think like the college experience has been totally disrupted for this group as well. And you know, that was such a formative time in my life. And I just can't imagine trying to do that from home, over a Zoom call. There's so much more beyond just even the education that goes along with that, that college experience that mm-hmm. It's sad that it's being lost right now.
I agree. So. I love in the book, you talk about the three big shifts in living preferences. Can we touch on those real quick?
Sure.
The word servant is awesome. You guys have coined it. Tell everyone what that word servant means. And it really goes into that big, big shift in living preference.
Yeah, the idea with Serban was really just to put a term around the concept that we were seeing where the suburbs were investing in their downtowns. And when they saw the success that the big cities had by investing in their downtowns in recent decades. And they said, we want some of that same kind of success. And so it's these mini downtowns that are popping up in the suburbs that that create that sort of work, live, play atmosphere all in one. You know, it's a different experience than in a traditional big city downtown. You've got some walkability, you've got the vibrant retail and restaurant scene, but you also have some of the benefits of the suburbs and that you've got great school, you know, better school quality compared to some of the urban environments. You've also got just a better affordability. I mean, it's more expensive to live in a big city than it is to live in a suburban location, mm-hmm. Generally speaking. And so they were seeing some of that affordability of the suburbs, but still experiencing some of that that city urban type environment in their suburban locations. And so we said as this big wave of young adults who was coming of age was moving from the cities to the suburbs, they were going to demand some of those same conveniences that they had from their urban living in the suburbs. And so I always say that it's a hard concept to quantify, but it's one of those things where you know it and you see it when you know it, or you know it when you see it. And that you've got just a real authentic atmosphere that it kind of feels like Main Street, you know, the downtown and the suburbs. And you might, I always use the analogy, you might not need a car during the week because you can walk or take public transportation to get from your job to shopping to your home, but you might want a car on the weekends to get out of town.
Mm-hmm. I love that. This is a great question because we talked about this a couple of days ago. You were looking at the trends prior to COVID, all these trends that were happening, flight to suburbs, immigration. What has happened now that COVID took over? Have they changed?
Yeah. So there's one of my colleagues, and I have to give her full credit for this. Michaela Sharp had put together this really fascinating presentation on how we need to think about sort of a post-COVID world. And she came up with these two rules, and I think they're fantastic. And one of them is you can't necessarily measure how people think they're going to behave post-crisis while they're in the midst of that crisis. Mm-hmm. And I love the analogy that she uses. She says, you know, how many women have said to their spouse or their partner as they're going through the throes of labor in a pregnancy, I'm never doing this again, you know? And yet we see a lot of women out there with two and three and four kids or six kids, you know? And so it's hard to measure during a time of crisis how we're actually going to behave. We think we know how we're going to behave going forward, but it's just such an uncertain a time of uncertainty that it's not necessarily an accurate predictor of how actual behavior is going to be. So I think that's one thing we need to think about. The other thing we need to think about too is that we have to look at those existing trends, those trends that were already occurring prior to COVID. And this is, I think, what you're alluding to. Mm-hmm. And think about how are the behaviors that were forming during this time, during the COVID crisis, how are those behaviors going to shape those trends going forward? Are they going to accelerate them? Are they going to decelerate them? And so I think that's a good framework to think about. So we can talk about this. I mean, we were already seeing immigration starting to decline in recent years. I think that decline gets accelerated in the midst of COVID because we've, as I said earlier, effectively shut down our borders. And then, you know, the move from the suburbs to the cities, that was already happening. That was going on prior to COVID. I think that also gets accelerated during this time as well, as more people are just saying, you know what, my home has become so much more important to me than it ever has. And you see that reflected in the numbers from reported by like Home Depot and Lowe's. I mean, just they're experiencing record profits right now because people are out investing in their homes. They're saying, if I'm going to be stuck in my house, I want to live like I want to live. And so we're seeing more people place a higher priority on their home. Mm-hmm. For some people, it's going to be fixing up their current home. And for some people, it's going to be moving because they said, if I have to go through something like this again, I don't want to be stuck in a house that I hate. And so we are seeing, I think, more migration occurring, more moving going on. And again, the perfect timing with sub 3% mortgage rates is a buying opportunity of a lifetime for many people. Mm-hmm. And so we are seeing, you know, certainly more home buying activity. And the new home market is doing very well right now. The sales numbers just came out yesterday. But, you know, I think people are really thinking about the importance of home. And that's becoming a bigger priority for them. And so they're either fixing up their current home or they're thinking about where's my next home going to be. And I've seen some really interesting conversations about this, seen some of my own peers do some things that have been pretty interesting too during this time. I just throw one example, some friends who live in California or lived in California here and saying, it's so expensive to live here. And quite frankly, our kids once, and they've got young kids, but they're already thinking like, decades out, if we want our kids to live near us, that's not going to happen here in Southern California.
Yep.
And so they packed up and they moved, you know, to the Southeast, mm-hmm. where it's more affordable. And they think, you know, this is, our kids could afford down the road to buy a house a couple streets away from us. And so that's very, I think, long-term thinking. And I like that idea of thinking so far in the future, because I've got young kids too. And so I'm thinking about those same types of things, but I think the home and just how we live is at the forefront of people's minds right now.
That's crazy, Chris, because I moved 30 years ago for that same reason. My daughter was going to become a freshman in college. I came down to Florida. There's no state income tax. The cost of living was cheaper. The college for a private college is probably half of what it would be in the Northeast. So it was a lot less expensive for her. She was able to stay home. And I know they like the area. So they're going to be able to afford to buy a house, maybe not on the coast of Florida, inland 10 or 15 minutes, but I already was thinking forward ahead. And by the way, did you speak to my wife? Because on my last labor, she actually said to me, this is the last one. And she meant it. I thought she was joking. I thought I could get another one, but she's like, nope, last one. So, you know, can't change that one, everybody. I love this question that we pose to each other. How is working from home affecting construction? Because that's got to have a big effect on people having a little office and even the demographics of the older generations moving in with the younger generations. Can you speak to that?
Sure. So, you know, I think it's been too soon to actually see floor plans necessarily change at this point. I think we're probably seeing some builders pull some different floor plans they've had maybe in the archives back off the shelf and rethink about some of those. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been so much emphasis on the big great room space or the big open space and create just one giant room atmosphere. And I think part of it, people are looking for a little more separation of space.
They
and
are.
If you're working from home, you need a door to be able to close to keep the noise from the kids out. And yep. I apologize if you hear my kids in the background here. I've got a door, but... It's not always a guarantee that it's going to keep the noise out. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're actually starting to see people think about that separation of space a little bit, creating just some more definition of spaces. And for some people, they're doing that, I don't want to say artificially, but they're finding a way to make that happen. Mm-hmm. But I think some people are also seeing that maybe the great room concept doesn't quite live as well in this type of environment as it did previously. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the extra bedroom is a huge idea for people right now. I mean, they're thinking about like, if I'm going to buy a house, maybe I need to think about a house that has a defined workspace that I can use. And whether that's an extra bedroom or if it's an office, a dedicated office, those are the kinds of things that's they're thinking about because there's that perception that we are going to be doing more work from home going forward. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier too, the idea that you're not necessarily as tied to your office location as you were before. If we truly move to a society where people are doing more work from home and you don't need to go in the office quite as much, and it may not be moving across state lines, but it may be moving a little bit further out, you know, a few miles out or an extra half hour. If you're not having to make that commute every single day, maybe you're willing to put up with a longer commute one day a week or 2 days a week. And so I think it is causing people to think a little bit about their location preferences as well. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I don't know that we've necessarily seen a huge shift in the floor plans yet, but I do think the extra bedrooms are becoming more important to people.
Single family home supply and demand. Can you speak to that also? Because right now the supply is really low and I guess demand is really overtaken and pricing down here has gone crazy. Is it because home ownership was at a 50-year low a couple of years ago and they just stopped building or they pulled back on building and now all of a sudden there's just a pent up demand for it?
So I mean, there's a few different things going on there. Right. There certainly is this pent up demand. You know, I think that one, we've got these record low mortgage rates, so that's contributing to part of that. You know, in a lot of cases, we've seen construction slow in areas partially because the costs have gotten so expensive, mm-hmm. And part of that is, you know, materials, but also part of it is driven by regulations as well. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen a lot of jurisdictions start adding more and more fees to the construction process, and that's made new home construction that much more expensive. Mm-hmm. We are certainly seeing a huge increase in home prices, and we're expecting to see continued home price appreciation, both in the resale market and the new home market, as a result of just exactly what you're pointing out. You've got lower supply right now, and you've got pretty strong demand. Now, let's see how long this demand plays out. Are we kind of borrowing from the future right now because people are thinking about, you know, their mindset has shifted about their home. They've got mortgage rates that are, you know, lifetime lows. We may be stealing some demand from the future right now, but I do think that, you know, there's some of these trade-offs that are going on right now. I just looked at the new home sales data that came out yesterday. I think for the second time ever, we saw the average new home price top $400,000 nationally. So yeah, we're definitely seeing home prices increasing as a result of that combination of strong demand and just a lower level of supply than the demand out there right now.
Last question before the personal growth. Outlook for multifamily and new construction.
Yeah, so multifamily, we're a little more bearish on multifamily. And again, we're having a meeting later today to kind of talk about our forecast. But there's a lot of multifamily under construction right now. I mean, we're almost at record levels as we kind of look at some of the government data on that. And so there's a lot of multifamily that's being built right now. And so I think there's some concern about are we in the process of oversupplying the market or have we oversupplied? And so I think we're expecting to see less multifamily construction in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. You do see some of the single family rental homes out there stealing share from the multifamily sector, mm-hmm. especially as the millennials age in those family formation years. If they are making that shift to more of a rentership mentality, they're saying, I want to rent, but I want to make sure my kids have a great backyard and I want to make sure they're in, you know, the best school districts. And so we are seeing a little bit of a shift towards more of the single family rental than multifamily at this time.
Why do you think it took so long for people to sort of wake up to the financial benefits of other states? I, you know, woke up in 2011 and ended up moving from New York to Tennessee for obvious reasons. It seems like it's just started really clicking in the last few years. Any idea why?
You know, I think technology enables that. I think, I mean, we just have more diversified local economies now, and we've proven that I think it's an evolution of jobs. We're not as tied to like manufacturing as we once were. And manufacturing, you had to be near the plant, right? And so I think as we become more of a knowledge economy, we found that people can work from anywhere, and then that companies can set up offices anywhere as well. And so I think that's technology has played a big role in that. But I also think just local economies have become more diversified to the point where you can find, you know, something that's in your wheelhouse in a market that is perhaps more appealing to you than where you're currently living. And so I think we are starting to see some of that. I mean, we're not seeing as much cross-state migration as we saw decades ago. I mean, the percentage of people that actually move from, you know, across state lines or across county lines, it's actually pretty small. We're seeing more people tend to stay in place. But, you know, where it is occurring, I think it's largely because of this evolution of the knowledge economy. Mm-hmm.
What we mentioned babies earlier. Do you have any early numbers on the Corona baby wave? This is what I'm predicting. I think there's going to be a lot of babies coming. I know a lot of pregnant people right now, and could they potentially surpass the boomers?
I don't think so. And I think we've seen births trending down for a number of years. Just as people are having kids later, and I think they're tending to have fewer kids over time. We're starting to see a little bit of a pickup in kids, and we went from like 2.0 kids per woman to 2.1 in recent years. But I think in general, we're seeing births trending downward. You know, maybe we saw initial pop. So we're what, 7 months into this, 8 months into this, maybe we'll see a little bit of a baby boom, a boomlet in here at the end of the year or even early next year. But I also think it's a hard time to, you know, so much uncertainty about what's going on in hospitals and the medical world. I mean, I've seen a lot of my peers say, yes, I have friends. I'm old, but I've got friends who are still having kids, or and they're saying, yeah, we're just going to kind of wait and see, you know, how this plays out a little bit. So I think some of the early numbers that I've seen suggest that we're seeing lower birth rates in now, and I think we might see that for a little while. So it's, you know, you
heard it here first. I'm predicting the Corona wave, not the second or third wave, the baby wave. That's what's going down here. So let's see here. The looking for value for folks out there. Obviously, our listeners are multifamily. Where do you see as a value market for multifamily right now? Meaning that there's growth, population, job growth, but there's still the affordability factor.
Yeah. So I do think we're going to see continued migration to the South. So some of those, especially in the Southeast, we see some of those markets. I look at Atlanta, I look at Raleigh, Durham, look at Nashville. I mean, those are markets that I think are going to continue to grow. And in the Texas markets for sure. I think we are going to see more, we're probably going to see more deals. And quite frankly, I mean, you see better value in some of these bigger cities right now as we haven't really seen, I think, some of the rents, the rent numbers still look pretty decent in terms of people paying their rent on time. Once the stimulus starts to run out in bigger numbers, I wonder if we're going to still see some of those same things. And we haven't really seen rents crash in terms of the rents being asked by apartment owners. But I do think we're in for a period where now when the stimulus starts to run out, I think we might start to see some concessions being offered or perhaps seeing some people being a little bit slower to pay on the rent. So I think there's going to be some value that's being created, some opportunities for people to get in to an apartment at a lower rent. But I do think where we are not necessarily going to see as much multifamily construction going forward as we've seen in maybe the last few years, I do think there is still going to be strong demand, solid demand for multifamily. It's just not going to be, we're not going to be adding to it as much.
So you've mentioned government stimulus a few times. Do you think there is going to be a negative impact from all the government stimulus propping us up? And do you think that hits the economy in a negative way anytime in the near future?
So I love the analogy that, or the comment that one of my colleagues had made and said, you know, if writing a check every month to people was a good way to get the economy going, we'd be doing this all day long. You know, we'd be doing this absent of coronavirus and the crisis has been created. We'd be writing checks all the time.
They do it every 8 years.
There's got to be a downside to it somewhere. When we're gonna wind up paying for this in the end somewhere. And so, yeah, I think we're trying to get through this time right now. But on the other end of this, I think there is going to be a cost to it, and that could be inflation. So I think. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this next round of stimulus, whether it happens or not. And I think the government is doing all the things they can, like having gone through the great financial crisis and seen, you know, some of the challenges they faced there. They were pretty quick to react this time around by providing stimulus. But I do think there's going to be something on the other side of this that we're going to wind up paying for it. And I suspect part of that will be inflation.
Interesting. All right, your numbers guy, okay? A political question. You got to answer it. Trump or Biden in a few days? Who you got?
I've really tried to separate the the political side out of this. So, personally,
who's going to win?
You know, we were surprised in 2016 So I think if I were trying to guess right now, I there's a chance we could be surprised too. So I'm gonna plead the fifth on this one. Sorry.
Oh, boo! Come on, man. We're not letting you off the hook on this one. Who you got?
This is just from the numbers, basically. I mean, if you're looking at numbers or you're looking at enthusiasm, it's all over the place. The problem is there's just only a few states that are in play right now. You don't know, you know, the polls are so tight right now, and you don't know where it's going to go.
Hang on. If he gives the right answer, you can promote it in his next book. See, we even knew who was going to win. Chris, one more opportunity. Who you got?
I'm going to plead the fifth on this, guys.
Oh, man. Wow. Okay. Well, listen, that is all I have for you. Gino, you want to close this out here?
For me, he started working 15 years ago. This is Chris Porter with John Burns. I think they've created an amazing company. I think the book is amazing. Let me put this up again. Big shifts ahead. If you're raising capital, if you want to speak intelligently to investors, if you want to try to foresee what's going to happen in the future, you need to read the book. You need to understand the different demographics, the different spending habits. Chris went over the four factors that cause these generational shifts. He talked about the three big shifts in living preferences. Everyone needs to go back and listen to it because it's really important, because we didn't even touch upon this, but companies like Airbnb and the share economy, I wish we could have gotten into that. But when you're reading the book, you'll understand how these companies came to fruition, whether it was VRBO, Airbnb, like they're the share economy. Like those millennials, they had less wealth. So all of a sudden they can't go out and rent these huge apartments. So, well, let's share rooms, right? And that's how it came to fruition. And it's just, you know, Uber and all these companies that came out, you could look back and go, wow, that's why it happened. So that's why you need to read the book now, so you can understand the trends that are happening now and hopefully predict what's going on in your business. That's why we're really bullish on multifamily. We see what's going on. We see that, you know, with these millennials are starting, you know, homes at a later home formation at a later age, and they have that debt, they'll be able to rent for a few more years. And we see the baby boomers who are selling the McMansions and buying RVs. We didn't talk about that. There's like a 250% increase in RV sales. What's going on with that? And coming down to the Southeast and say, you know what, I've got this pile of cash, let me put in the bank, I'm retired, I'm going to use that, and I can go out and buy a rent a Class A apartment for $1,500 a month and live like a king. So it's really important when you read the book. Chris dives into all these different metrics and all of these different shifts that are happening in the economy right now.
You know, I'll just kind of make a shameless plug here, but you know, in the book, we try to cover everything at the national level, and we get into some sort of regional analysis. But our bread and butter, I mean, what our clients pay us for is to really understand what's happening at the local level in a lot of these markets. So, mm-hmm. you know, our research subscriptions that we offer to members of our client base is really trying to help them understand at a deeper level, at a more granular level, how the individual markets are playing out. And so, you know, it's a combination of looking at the data, looking at the analysis, combining it with a lot of this demographic information. And so I think there are some differences that were playing out by geography as well. I think it's really important for people to understand sort of those local market dynamics. The book does a great job of sort of setting the framework from a national perspective, but I just encourage your listeners to think about it sort of at a more micro level too. And how are these trends affecting my local market as well?
Mm-hmm. Chris, before we go, any book recommendations or anything along those lines that you'd like to recommend to folks?
Yeah, so I mean, we talked about our book, and thank you again for the plug on that. You know, we put it out in print a couple of years ago, so it's a little bit out of print, but we're constantly updating the information. We've also put out a newsletter that's, I think, really helpful as well. We call it The Light, and the idea is that there's a light at the end of this, and so we're trying to think about what are the positives. As we think about, so it's a free newsletter. It's available to anybody who wants to subscribe. Just go to our website, realestateconsulting.com, and it's comes out weekly. And I think it's just a great insight into sort of how some of these local market dynamics are playing out, but then also what are some of the issues that we're facing as an industry right now, and how do we think through those and figure out what's on the other side of this?
Very cool. Yeah. So guys, check out The Light, and then Chris, who's going to win the election? No, okay.
Good try.
All right, guys, it's been real. Chris, really appreciate your time today. And Gino, as always, great job, and thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, fellas.
Take care, everyone.